Okay, 1 Kings chapter 17, we're going to be looking tonight at verses 8 to 16, and I've entitled the message, Food from an Empty Barrel. Food from an Empty Barrel. And as we begin tonight, I want to just do a little bit of review like we did last week. It'll help us to just be able to remember the things we've looked at. First of all, we saw last time that God spoke to Elijah. It was God speaking to him, and God had his message for him, and God gave him a specific direction and told him exactly where to go, where to hide, and how to deal with it, and all that he was supposed to do. And we need to listen when God speaks to us through his word as well. We also saw that he was to go to a particular place. He was to go to the brook Kereth, and he was supposed to stay there, and that God would take care of him. God would meet his needs. So there's a specific place that he was to be. And then that the ravens would feed him. God had promised that the ravens would care for him and feed him. And God met that need, and God fulfilled his promise. And then the time came when the brook dried up. The brook dried up. And when that happened, it brought disaster into his situation when the brook dried up. And so that's where we find our left off last time. The brook had just dried up. Now what's he going to do? So let's look at verse number 8 of 1 Kings 17. Look at verse number 8. It says, and the word of the Lord came unto him, saying, arise, get thee to Zarephath, which belongeth to Zidon, and dwell there. Behold, I have commanded a widow woman there to sustain thee. Let's just stop there so we don't read ahead of ourselves too far. But as we think about the situation here, Elijah had been by the brook Kereth for quite some time, several months, perhaps 6 months, if some estimate. And God was meeting his needs. God was providing for him. And now he comes to the place where he says, God, what do I do now? What do I do now? And God hadn't given him any information thus far. And Elijah was learning greater dependence on God. You know, this is an important lesson for each of us. And it'll help us if we'll just grasp these things. God had been providing for him with the ravens and with the water, and God was meeting his needs. And now it came to the place where the brook had dried up, and he had nothing left for him to drink. The ravens were still coming, but he was thirsty. And God waited until the brook dried up before he gave him more instructions. And you know, that is something that is hard for us to accept sometimes. God will allow things to come into our lives where maybe he dries up some brook for us, some situation. Maybe we lose our job, or we're out of money, or this situation gets worse, or whatever the case may be, and we think, what am I going to do now? And God doesn't tell us until we are desperate and we're in need. And then God opens it up for us. And I felt that way, and perhaps you have as well at different times. And it's a terrible feeling, you know. God, have you abandoned me? Have you left me? What's going on? Why don't you tell us what's going on? Why don't you tell us what you have in mind here? And God hadn't revealed it to him until the time now that the brook's dried up, and he's waiting for God to give him information and give him the next directions. And so now Elijah's about to hear this from God, about to get that information from God. But you know, as you look in the Bible, there's a lot of examples of Bible characters that went through the same type of thing. For example, Sarah. God waited until Sarah was too old before he would give her children. I mean, she was so old that she was gone through menopause. She was impossible for, humanly speaking, for her to have a child. And God gave her a child. Because God was waiting for the impossible so that he could show himself strong. We find that Israel, when they were had left Egypt, and they were wandering through the toward the the Red Sea, and they got to the Red Sea, and they're surrounded, and they can't find any way across. And God waited until they were trapped before God opened the Red Sea and allowed them to cross. Because God wanted them to depend upon him. We find another example, and in that God waited until the night before his execution, before he sent an angel to release Peter from prison. It was that night that Peter, the very next day, Peter was to be executed. God waited till the very last day. Not that God couldn't have done it earlier, but God wanted people to pray. God wanted them to be dependent upon him. And another example is in the life of Paul. and how that God waited until all hope of surviving the storm was gone before he gave Paul the assurance that they were going to all be safe and land on an island. And you know, these are all reminders to us that we must not lose faith in God when God waits until the end, or what we think is the end, before he's ready to give us an answer for the next step. And you know, sometimes that'll happen in our lives where we say, God, what do you want us to do? And God doesn't open the door. God doesn't show us. God doesn't reveal anything. God doesn't lay anything on our heart until the very last moment. And then God opens the door for us. And we need to be careful not to think that somehow God is falling asleep or God isn't capable of giving us information sooner. God does it on purpose to make us depend upon him. Because if God gave us that information up front many times, we would fail to depend upon God. We would fail to do that. And Pastor Alan Carr put it this way. He said, before God can mold us, he must melt us. And that is so true. Many times we see that in our lives. The book of Isaiah, chapter 40, verse 31 says, but they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up as with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. God wants us to wait upon him and depend upon him, even if he doesn't open up the door of opportunity right away. And, you know, there's a lot of times where we're waiting for something. God, when are you going to provide this? When are you going to open the door for this? When are you going to show me what you want for my life? When are you going to just reveal these things? God will do it in his time. But in the meantime, he wants us to wait upon him and depend upon him and draw close to him and not lose faith. But then we find also that God is always on time. God is always on time. Elijah had no more water to drink. And once again, God gave him three clear instructions. All right, notice there in verse number 9. Arise. All right, so the first thing he tells him, his first command was to arise. You know, this was probably a welcomed command to him because he'd been sitting there by the brook for who knows how long. And the brook had dried up and God finally says, okay, it's time to go. Arise. So that was good news to him. So the first command was to arise. Then he says, go to Zarephath. Now, whether he knew his geography well enough so that he knew exactly where Zarephath was, I don't know. That's neither here nor there, but God did tell him where it is. But he says, I want you to go to Zarephath. Now, that means he had to leave his secret hiding place. Now, why didn't God just send another source of rain? I mean, God had Moses strike the rock and water came out. God could have done that right there at the brook. God could have just said, all right, Elijah, go over to this stone over here and speak to the stone or hit it with your stick and water's going to gush out and you'll be fine. God could have done it that way, but he didn't. God chose to meet another need, another person's need along with his at the same time. So he had to leave his hiding place and he had to travel about 130 kilometers up to Zarephath. Now, that's a long ways up there, 130 kilometers. And Zarephath, the very name Zarephath, literally means a smelting shop. It was a workshop for refining and smelting metals. It was a small Phoenician town. So you look up there, it's in Phoenicia. It's north of Galilee. It's in the area there of would be Lebanon area type area. And it was basically between, right about midway between Tyre and Sidon, there in Phoenicia. Now, as you think about this, the little town was about 1.5 kilometers from the ocean. It was a coastal town there. And it was the home area of Queen Jezebel. Now, it's almost like God's sense of humor. Elijah's been a hunted man, a wanted man, on all the wanted posters throughout all of Israel for months now. Ahab has searched high and low everywhere for him, looking for him, trying to find him. And where does God send him? Right back to Jezebel's home area. That is amazing. And God sent him back there and gave him a place to stay, and God would protect him. And, you know, we can't help but wonder, what went through Elijah's mind when God said, I want you to go to Zarephath? And you think, Zarephath, Zarephath. That's up there. That's up there where Jezebel's from. What? God, what are you thinking? Why are you sending me there? All those kind of thoughts. I mean, he's a human just like us. We're going to see that very vividly as the chapters go on. And he had feelings like we have. And my first thought was, God, are you sure? Is that really where you want me to go? There's got to be other places that would be better hiding places than there. Why not go south? Why not go down to Beersheba area? There's certainly good places to hide down there. Why Zarephath? But God had a reason. God sent him up there. And then, notice the command. He goes on. He says, I want you to get thee to Zarephath, which belongeth to Zidon, and dwell there. He says, I want you to stay there until further notice. That's where you're going to be called home until further notice. And so, in that little small smelting town, Elijah was supposed to go and find his next hiding place. And it was there that God goes on, and he says there, behold, the widow, verse number 9, behold, I have commanded a widow woman there to sustain thee. Now that's a very significant thing. Here, a widow woman is going to take care of him. And she's from Sidon. We're going to talk more about that in just a moment. She's from Zarephath, which is up in the area of Tyre and Sidon. Now, God gives a promise. All right, as we look at God's promise to him was, he gave him, after these three commands, God promised him that he would have this woman sustain him. We see in the end of verse 9, behold, I have commanded a widow woman there to sustain thee. Now, as we think about that, it was God that commanded the widow woman to sustain him. And he said that he commanded her to sustain him. Now, as we actually meet the widow woman, there doesn't seem to be any indication that she knew anything about this until Elijah showed up. It doesn't appear that she did. But God knew that in the land of Phoenicia, there was lived a widow woman who had faith in Jehovah. And this widow's woman's husband had died, leaving her with no means of income, and she had a young son to feed. And even without the terrible drought, that was not a good combination. I mean, if you were looking for somebody to stay with and say, you know, I need lodging for a little while and I'm going to need some food, the last thing you'd think of is a widow, certainly not a widow who is a Gentile in a foreign land with a child during a drought. All those things are negatives because she had absolutely nothing. And God was going to meet a need there. But you know, this widow woman, we don't know how, but she seems to have faith in God. Now, some commentators say that, you know, they think that she gained faith in God as she was talking to Elijah. But you look at the details of it as we read on. I think she had to have known about God and had faith in God before all this took place. And we ask ourselves, how could a desperate widow possibly feed Elijah? She couldn't even provide for herself. You know, our job is not to question God and say, God, how can you do this? You know, when troubles come our way or we have a need or some great problem comes and we say, God, we need help. How could you possibly do that? Well, the question isn't how can he possibly do it. God can do anything. And we forget that. God can do anything. And, you know, as you think about that, you think about the examples of God doing great things in the Bible. I mean, who caused the fish to swallow Jonah? It was God that did that. Who caused the donkey to talk to Balaam? It was God that did that. Who caused these phenomenal things to take place in the Bible when Jesus walked on the water? Or Jesus put that coin in the fish's mouth and told Peter to go throw on a hook and the first fish that comes up is going to have a coin in his mouth. God did all that. See, God can do the impossible. And we need to remember that. And it's a reminder to us that we need to just trust God instead of questioning God. Isaiah 55 verses 8 and 9 are good verses for us to remember. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, says the Lord. For as The heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. God is far above us. God knows exactly what he's doing. So God made a promise to Elijah. God says, I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to have a widow feed you, and she'll meet your needs. And so, how does Elijah respond? Well, Elijah responded by obeying God's command. Notice in the next verse, verse 10, so he arose and went to Zarephath. He arose and went to Zarephath. Now, as you think about that, he had to travel that 130 kilometers up there to Zarephath. And if you remember on our map there, how he probably went up the eastern side of the Jordan and around Galilee in that way. But the more direct way would be to go across Israel, and but to go directly through there, it would have meant having to go through right through the area where Ahab lived and was looking for him. So he probably took the detour, don't know for sure, but he went up to Zarephath just as God told him to do. Now, as he traveled, you think about that as well. There was a lot of problems with this travel. First of all, he has no food and he has no water. So somehow God provided food and water for him as he journeyed those 130 kilometers. Now you can't walk 130 kilometers in half an hour. So it's, you know, it took him a while to get up there. And another thing, he was a wanted man. I mean, if they put pictures out in those days, his picture was posted on every tree in the area. Looking, if you see this guy, let us know. He's a wanted man, dead or alive. Everybody was looking for him. How did he travel that distance without getting seen? Remember, he's not the typical character that looks like everybody else. He's got a rough, rugged look to him, and he's got his old sheepskin around him, or camel skin around him, and he's a rough and wild looking guy. And he would have stuck out, and everybody would have known. How did he get there? Perhaps he traveled at night. It's a possibility. Would have been cooler. Not easy to see him that way. Maybe that's what he did. It could be that God simply made him invisible looking. God took care of him. Whatever it was, God met the need. And God must have somehow disguised him so that he didn't get seen. And in some miraculous way, then God provided food and water for him. And as he walked this dangerous trek up there to Zarephath, and God was with him the whole direction, the whole way. And, you know, as we think about this, God never promised his children a life of ease. God never promised us we'd have a life of ease. You know, it's easy to think, well, you know, I'm God's child. God should take care of me. Yes, God will take care of me, but it doesn't mean he's going to give us a life of ease. A lot of times Christians have gone through a lot of hardships and a lot of problems and a lot of troubles. You think of Job, for example. I mean, God allowed Job to go through tremendous hardships. But Job hadn't done anything wrong. But God allowed that for his learning time, a time of good for him. And Job affirmed that God allowed those kind of things. In Job chapter 14, verse number 1, it says, man is born of a woman, man that is born of a woman is a few days and full of trouble. You know, so he recognized that. We read over in Psalm 55 and verse number 22, cast thy burden upon the Lord and he shall sustain thee. He shall never suffer the righteous to be moved. We sang about that tonight. Cast thy burden on the Lord and he shall keep thee. And, you know, that's where that song came from. Now, tomorrow when I send you the notes, in the notes here at the bottom of the first page, there is a link to a YouTube. I strongly recommend you watch it. And if you don't, you'll be the loser. It is an awesome, somebody took some really careful time to, people were dressed up kind of like this guy here in authentic type of look. And he meets this widow, tells her the situation. And it is an amazing little video. It's about 5 minutes long or something like that. Well worth watching. You'll be glad you watched it. I wish I could show it here tonight, but it was a YouTube thing. Now, we find next the widow's serious distress. She had a serious problem. She had nothing. You know, when he arrived there at Zarephath, God led Elijah directly to the woman that he told him about, this widow woman, near the gate of the city. Now, how did he know? Maybe the Spirit of God spoke in his ear and said, that's the one right over there. See the one with the little child picking up some sticks? That's her. I don't know what God did, but somehow he knew, and he walks up to this strange woman, never seen her before. She's never seen him before. Total strangers. And Elijah meets her. And she's, you know, we ask ourselves, well, was she waiting for Elijah? I don't think so. Had God told her about his plans? It doesn't look like it. Her response to Elijah indicates that she knew nothing of God's plans. As we read on here in verse 10, that he arose, and when he came to the gate of the city, behold, the widow woman was there gathering of sticks. And he called to her and said, fetch me, I pray thee, a little water in a vessel that I may drink. So here he meets this woman, asks her a basic courtesy question. Would you please fetch me a little water? I'm thirsty. Can you give me something to drink? Now, even that question, during a drought that has been going on for all these months, could have been a difficult request to fulfill. We don't know whether all their wells were still producing water. Some of them may have dried up. May have been a difficult thing to get. But she didn't hesitate a great deal about the water. That seemed to be pretty basic. But it reminds us of when Jesus was at the well in Sychar. And Jesus asked the Samaritan woman for a drink. And here Elijah is asking a Gentile widow for a drink. And that simple request could have been a difficult request, but then he asked her for a morsel of bread. Look at verse 11. And as she was going to fetch it, he called to her and said, bring me, I pray thee, a morsel of bread in thine hand. So now he has made the request much more difficult. He says, I not only want a drink of water, but I'm hungry too. Would you please bring me a tiny, small little biscuit of bread? And this whole scenario, you think about it. For a Jewish man to be talking to a Gentile woman was kind of an unheard of thing. And then to request of her water and food seemed unreasonable to her, a widow with nothing left. And in the whole custom of the situation, you know, depending on a foreign widow to provide his meals was humbling for a Jew. And then the fact that she was a Gentile woman was more humbling. And the fact that she was poor and destitute and a widow would have been even more humiliating to ask this woman to provide for me. She owed him nothing. Especially when she was facing imminent starvation. She goes on in verse 12, and she said, as the Lord thy God liveth, I have not a cake, but a handful of meal in a barrel, and a little oil in a cruse. And behold, I am gathering two sticks, that I may go in and dress it for me and my son, that we may eat it and die. She said, all I have is a little bit of meal. Getting a couple sticks, we're going to go make a little fire, we're going to make a bread, and then I guess we're going to die. We have nothing else to eat. Nowhere to get anything. We are going to starve to death. And his request may have been even a greater test to her faith. Because he was asking her to give her all. And did Elijah know that? I don't know. I don't know how much he knew. But he knew that God told him to do it. And it reminds us again of when Jesus gave that illustration. As he and his disciples were sitting in the temple and they saw the widow come and put in her two mites into the offering barrel that was there. And the disciples just looked at it like you and I would have probably looked at it and thought, boy, she didn't put in much. And Jesus looked at it and said, she gave more than anybody that has been here this afternoon. And they all looked at him like, What are you talking about? She put in two little teeny mites. And Jesus said, yes, but I know what something you don't know. She gave everything she had. She has nothing left. And so it was that this woman was being asked to sacrifice the very last that she had to give to a stranger that she knew nothing about. Now, what do you suppose went through the mind of that widow when he asked her all those things? You know, all kinds of thoughts must have gone through her mind. I don't even know this guy. But you know, there's some things that she did know about him. When she said, as the Lord thy God liveth, she revealed several facts that she had observed. Number one, she recognized him as an Israelite. Number two, though most of Israel no longer served Jehovah, she assumed that this man did. As the Lord thy God liveth. Number three, she knew the title of God was Lord or Jehovah. She could have called him Elohim, but she called him Jehovah. Number four, she believed that the Lord was a living God. She calls him the Lord thy God that liveth. So she understood a little bit about God. And though she lived in a Gentile land, somehow she had learned about Jehovah, the living God of Israel. And she had placed her trust in him. We don't know how. We don't know. Maybe she had traveled. Maybe her husband had traveled. Somehow she knew about Jehovah. And somehow she had placed her faith in Jehovah. And I can't help but believe that in all of God's scheme, he knew that when Elijah was going to run out of water, that the place to send him was to that widow at Zarephath, because there was a saintly little Gentile widow who believed in God and had nothing left and was going to die. But I'm going to do a miracle for her and her son and for you, and to show how great I am. God did wonders in his plan. And he planned this. And God gives no clue as to how she came to faith in God. But she seems to have had genuine faith in God. And God was leading and guiding in all of this. And he will direct our paths as well, just as he directed Elijah. And he had directed him in a very specific way. And his coming may have been an answer to her prayers. She may have been praying, oh Jehovah God, I'm going to starve to death, and I've got a little boy, he's going to starve to death. Would you please somehow provide for me? And God does this wonderful miracle. I don't know all those explanations, but somehow she knew about God, and she believed in God, and she was willing to trust God in this situation. The widow explained that she had not a cake, or a handful of meal, but just a handful of meal in the barrel and a little oil. And that's all she had. A little tiny handful of the ground flour and a tiny bit of oil. Mixed the two together into a paste, laid on the hot rocks on her fire, and let it cook. And that was going to be their last meal. She had nothing else. She continued, and behold, I'm gathering these two sticks that I may dress it for me and my son, we may eat it and die. She had nothing else. She was in serious distress. And here God brought together Elijah and a widow who were both so poor that they had nothing, so that God could show himself strong. It reminds us of a great verse that we need to memorize in 2 Chronicles 16:9. That verse says, for the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong on behalf of those whose heart is perfect toward him. The eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth looking for the opportunity to show himself strong for those who will put their trust in Him. And God is watching us for those same opportunities to show Himself strong. And God can. We find next Elijah's confident faith. By faith, Elijah urged her not to fear. Her situation was humanly fearful. Starvation was imminent. And though humanly foolish, we need not fear as long as we are in the center of God's will. We see down in verse number 13, and Elijah said unto her, "Fear not. Go and do as thou hast said, but make me thereof a little cake first, and bring it unto me, and after make for thee and for thy son." You know, we look at that, and from a human perspective, we say, that's kind of selfish of him. Say, bake me a cake first. But it was part of God's plan, because God was testing her faith. Would she give her last little bit, knowing that the man of God said, after you've made it for me, then go and make another one for you and your son? And she knew she only had enough for one. But Elijah said, you make it for me first, and you'll have enough to make one for you and your son. He was testing her faith. And Elijah, in his confident faith, urged her to do this. Psalm 56:3 says, "What time I'm afraid, I will trust in thee." When we are afraid, we need to trust God. And Elijah seems to be trusting God. Elijah's a man of faith. And we're going to see in just another couple of chapters that his faith crashes in a heap. He is a human like us. It isn't like he's some huge faith hero that he's just got invincible faith. He's got strong faith, yes, but he's just like us. And here, he has great faith in God, and Elijah challenges her to make the cake for him first, and he believed that God was going to meet the need. And Elijah confidently revealed God's promise that to provide. In verse number 14 again, he says, "And thus saith the Lord, God of Israel, the barrel of meal shall not waste, neither shall the cruse of oil fail until the day that the Lord sendeth rain upon the earth." What a promise. And based on that promise, this little old widow woman believed God. And he went and did what God had told her to do, or Elijah had told her to do. And so, she claimed the promise, or Elijah claimed the promise, and urged her to do the same. You know, there are a lot of promises in the Bible that God gives us that can be an encouragement to us. But it's important for us to remember that not every promise in the Bible is for us. Not every promise is for me, not every promise is for you. Some of the promises are very specific. Some of the promises were given to a particular person at a particular time for a particular purpose. And we cannot claim those promises. I mean, for example, this promise here that was given to this woman, that the cake wouldn't, or the meal wouldn't go away until it started raining. Well, that's not a promise to me. I can't say, well, you know, our bowl of food here is not going to go away. It'll always be there. God will keep providing it. Well, God will provide, but that's not a promise that I can claim here. It's a promise that I can say, that's why I got this promise right there. God said he would do it, so I'm not worried about it. No, the promise wasn't mine. But there's a lot of promises in the Bible that are for us. Now we ask ourselves an important question. How can you tell the difference between a promise that is given to somebody specifically and a promise that is given to me? Well, there's a few things that can help us in that. Number one, we need to evaluate the promise. You know, to whom was it first written? Who did God say it to? That'll help us to determine. And then, do other scriptures apply apply this promise to Christians? You know, sometimes there'll be a New Testament quotation using that promise that applies it to Christians. That's a possibility. Another thing is it a general principle that is for everyone? You know, there's a lot of general principles in the Psalms. There's a lot of general principles in Proverbs. But you get into other books like Kings or Jeremiah or Isaiah, and many of the promises in there are specific ones to a particular group at a particular time, at a particular situation that we can't necessarily claim. And so we've got to make sure that it is a general principle promise? Is it a conditional promise? You know, some promises, if you do this, I will do this. Well, that's also a consideration. Is it a have I met the conditions? So there's a lot of things to consider when we're looking at the Bible promises that God gives us here. But Elijah had confident faith in God. But we find also that the widow had courageous faith. She had courageous faith. It's amazing. You look at her faith and it just is an encouragement to your soul. In verse 15, and she went and did according to the saying of Elijah. And she and he and her house did eat many days. She obeyed this total stranger. She had just gone out on a walk to find some sticks to cook the last handful of food that she had in the house, all that she owned. She meets a total stranger from a foreign country, recognizes him as a child of Jehovah, and believes his word and goes and cooks her last handful of food for him. And when she did, God multiplied it, and she had enough for her son and herself. And they ate, as it says, many days. About 3 years, to be exact. Many days. And she had great faith, courageous faith. And she based that faith on what she knew about Jehovah. And you know, we know so much more about Jehovah than she did. Why is it that we struggle with faith? We know far more than she did. We've got a Bible that tells us about his character. She didn't have that. I mean, at best, she had heard some rumors of things that Jehovah had done. We've got the whole Bible. It explains it in detail. And yet we struggle. I struggle sometimes with faith. How can we struggle with faith when she had so little information and yet she believed God? She simply knew God and believed his word. We've got no excuse for lack of faith. It's to our shame when we don't have faith. And I'll admit, I'm sometimes lack faith. And that's not good. But then notice, lastly, God's daily supply. Just as God said he would do. Verse number 16, and the barrel of meal wasted not, neither did the cruse of oil fail, according to the word of the Lord, which he had spake by Elijah. Every day, when they went to scoop it out, there was always more. Every day, when they poured out the oil to mix it with the meal, there was always more. Every day. Not for 1 year, not for 2 years, but at least 3 full years. Every day they would find more to eat, just like God had promised. God met their needs. Matthew chapter 6 and verse number 33, Jesus said, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. We need to trust God. I want to end tonight by reading a little story, an illustrating story. But a very heartwarming story when you think about the application. The legend has it that a man was lost in the desert and just dying for a drink of water. And he stumbled upon an old shack, a broken down, windowless, roofless, weather-beaten old shack. And he looked about the place and found a little shade from the heat of the desert sun. And as he glanced around, he saw a pump about 15 feet or, you know, how many is that? A few meters away, never far. And the old rusty pump handle, and he stumbled over there and he grabbed the pump handle and began furiously pumping it, and nothing happened. Nothing came out. Disappointed, he staggered back. But as he was going back, he noticed off to the side an old jug. And he looked at it, and he wiped off the dirt and the dust and read a message on the side of the jug that said, You have to prime the pump with all the water in this jug, my friend. P.S. Be sure you fill the jug again before you leave. He popped the cork off the jug, and sure enough, it was almost full of water. And suddenly he was faced with the decision. If he drank the water, he could live. But if he poured the water down the old rusty pump, maybe it would yield fresh, cool water from deep down in the well. He had to make a hard decision. For those of you who don't understand pumps, they have a leather valve in the pump. And the leather dries out, and it has to get wet before it can have any suction. And pouring that water down there would wet that leather valve and make the suction. But you had to pour this whole jug down it. He studied the possibilities of both options. What should he do? Pour it into the old pump and take a chance of the fresh, cool water to drink? What was in the jug? Drink what was in the jug and ignore its message? Or should he waste all the water in hopes of fulfilling the water that would come out? Reluctantly, he poured all the water into the pump. Then he grabbed the handle and began to pump. Squeak, squeak, squeak. Still nothing came out. Squeak, squeak, squeak. A little began to dribble out. And then a small stream. And finally, it gushed out. And to his relief, the cool water poured out of the rusty old pump. And eagerly, he filled the jug and drank from it. He filled it another time, and once again, he drank the refreshing contents. Then he refilled the jug for the next traveler. He filled it to the top, popped in the cork, and added a little note. Believe me, it really works. You have to give it all before you can get anything back. That is the essence of genuine faith. It is not a risk, but it is a challenge to the human reasoning. Faith will call on us to do the unthinkable so that we might receive the impossible. So it's a good reminder to us. And if you ever find an old pump like that, pour the water down the top and it'll get it to run.